Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. I'm still muted. It's episode 250 and I still managed to mute my mic through the start. You know you're a super pro when. All right. Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host Jocelyn, and joining me as always is my co-host Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, I'm here. 250. That's 5 years.
I know. I wonder, out of 250 episodes, how many times I've screwed up the intro. I think it's probably at least 50.
I think you didn't screw up the intro. You screwed it up on purpose because you knew that's a tenet of the show.
That's true. I just wanted to keep it going. That was it. Yeah, the inside joke for episode 250. How many times Jocelyn screws up the intro?
You know what? I've done the intro probably definitely not 250 times. Maybe like 5 times, and I will say I screw it up nearly every time. Sometimes I'll even call myself Jocelyn. It's just I'm Ron Burgundy. Like it happens. You just read it, and sometimes you trip over your words. It's fine, but yeah. That's not what we're here to talk about. No. Let's move on.
We are actually here to talk about our very, very early years of the Gamers Inn. So normally what we do is we ask people to either write in when we have some sort of a milestone episode, or we take a look back at our favorite moments from the past however many episodes. But this time, we decided to actually go back and look at our archives and figure out the games that we played in the very early years of the Gamers Inn. We decided to go back, play them again, and then figure out if they stood the test of time. So I know I cheated a little bit because I had remastered versions, so that little bit of cheating there. But still, I mean, went back and played, for me, it was Skyrim and Mass Effect 3. Ryan played some Star Wars, some Skyrim, and some Zelda. So we're going to talk about our experiences with all of those games tonight. We thought it would be a really fun kind of 250th episode kickoff to our holiday season. We are going to do our Game of the Year episode next week. But yeah, we're right, you know, it's right before Christmas. We thought, you know, we'd have a kind of, well, what we thought would be a kind of lighter, more fun thing that ended up being probably more homework than we've done in a long time.
Yeah, we had to play multiple games, and I don't know about you, Jocelyn, but I had to figure out the best way to play said games. And fun times.
Yep, I had to actually like figure out how to do backwards compatibility stuff on the Xbox One, and then I had to do a ridiculous number of install things, but we're going to jump into all of that in just a second. I wanted to remind everybody that you can still donate to our Extra Life campaign right up until December 31st by going to bit.ly/TGI2016 with TGI in capitals. You have to go down to the roster and pick one of the people on the team, but I did also want to tell everybody that because of some very generous, very awesome donations that we've gotten in the past couple of days, thank you guys so much. We have hit our goal as a team of $3,000. We're actually over our goal now. So whoa, thank you all so much for the support. I've been mentioning it on TGI. I've been mentioning it on For Azeroth as well as Angry Chicken, and you guys totally came through, and thank you very much to everyone for supporting this amazing cause, and it makes a really big difference, especially at this time of year. There's Ryan wearing a t-shirt. But especially at this time of year, a lot of the funds that go into the foundations, not only do they help to provide medical care, but they also help to provide extras for the kids, things like playrooms and toys and all of those things that really make a big difference, especially around Christmas. So thank you guys so much for helping us out. I know Kids Hospital in Toronto really appreciates it. And yeah, it's a great cause every year. And we couldn't do it without you. So thank you everyone for supporting our Extra Life campaign. And if you haven't had a chance to donate yet and you would like to, you can do so up until December 31st. So thank you guys, all of you. And without further ado, we're going to jump right into what we are playing, which is pretty much our entire show tonight. So Ryan, why don't you kick it off with Legend of Zelda? Because this is one that So I did a lot of like digging things out, and I thought I was going to have way more time when I first texted you a few days ago.
Yeah.
I had this huge list of games, and Skyward Sword is one of them, and I was like, I'm going to play this, I'm going to play this, I'm going to play this, and then reality slash time snuck up on me.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to actually play Skyward Sword.
You know, it's funny, I was kind of thinking of what games I wanted to play, and I remember Skyward Sword was one of those first titles that we connected on in terms of like anticipation of it coming out.
Yeah.
And then when it came out, there was this sort of shock, I think, after realizing that this isn't quite the Zelda game that either of us remembered. And I think for me, if I look back and playing it now, I think I was just hungry for more Zelda, and I was fine with the motion controls and had accepted the fact that the Wii spit out graphics that weren't necessarily on par with some of the other experiences we're used to playing. Because if you remember, folks, the Wii was out during a time when the 360 and the PS3 were spitting out some pretty high definition. So
I remember when Skyward Sword first came out, mm-hmm. the picture was so bad to me because I had been mm-hmm. playing things on PC or on Xbox, or, well, I guess not PlayStation, it was PC and Xbox for me. And I remember the picture being so bad and like the anti-aliasing being so bad, which I also thought was really funny because I didn't remember it being that bad for, you know, other titles. But I actually went out to get like the super fancy extra cord to see if that, because it wasn't HDMI. I can't even remember what it was.
RCA, and then composite was the upgrade.
Yeah. So I got the upgraded one thinking that that would make a difference. It didn't make a difference. It was just terrible.
Yeah. And this was one of those exchanges between the two of us where I was like, oh no, she's not enjoying it. Hey, do you have component cables? Maybe that'll work. And no, it nothing is going to make the Wii, and I tried to explain this, like, nothing's going to make the Wii, and I think we all understand this now, nothing's going to make it magically HD better. Now, that being said, I've been playing Skyward Sword again. I got through the first dungeon, and I've been playing it on the Wii U. So the Wii U is backwards compatible. You just slide the disc in. It boots into Wii mode. You play the game. It doesn't remove the motion control, which we'll get to that in a bit. But I believe, as if I'm someone who hasn't played the game in 5 years, I believe it does look better through HDMI, but I'm going to stop you right there. Not as good as the screenshots I'm looking at for Breath of the Wild as my background mm-hmm. picture, because honestly, it's still a Wii game. It's still got that weird art style that never really meshed well with the way the Wii output graphics. Like, that art style, I think, was mostly to blame for what you felt was a lot of anti-aliasing issues, because that art style is basically, let's apply a pastel blur to everything.
Yeah.
And on the Wii U, you notice it a lot more, but there's less, it feels like there's less jaggies. I think it's a clearer picture because it's through the HDMI, but it's not necessarily improving the graphics.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get that out of the way first and foremost. And the graphics never really bothered me. Like, I was kind of like, this is a Zelda experience. We're not going to get another one of these for 5 years. Literally, it's been 5 years.
It's been 5 years and we still don't have a new Zelda. So.
Yeah. So you take what you can get, you know, in my opinion. And I think Nintendo heard the issues that people had with Skyward Sword. And even I had issues with the game. Like, first and foremost, the motion control and the intro piece to that game, you notice pretty hard on. Like, I played for like 4 hours, and I had just gotten to the dungeon and gotten into the first dungeon. And the first dungeon is very compact, but also filled with the motion control madness that is in that game, you know?
Yep.
And like, layered on very thick. And I now see why Nintendo scrapped the idea to make a remaster of this game, because they wouldn't be able to spend the time to fix what a lot of people saw as a pretty glaring issue in their Zelda game, which was just the amount of motion control. And I remember 5 years ago when this game came out and saying, Justin's like, oh my God, IGN gave it a 10. It's the best Zelda game ever made. And let's just say that person now works for Nintendo who gave that 10. you know, it's like,
see, and this was I think back at the time I basically called it like the grading on the curve for Nintendo. It's like, it's the best Nintendo offering. It's the best Zelda offering. That doesn't actually make it a 10 out of 10 compared to anything else being offered at the time. And it's kind of too bad. And I know, obviously, going back and playing it, they haven't fixed anything. They've, you know, like you said, there's better hardware now to play it on. But the two biggest things for me were the graphics and the motion control, which were things that didn't bother you. So now looking back on it, playing through the first dungeon, like, did you have a good time? Did you enjoy it? Is it something that you think that you would, you know, continue playing through? After, if we didn't have to do it for the show, like, after we hang up the call, are you going to go play more Skyward Sword?
Well, I was just playing before we started recording, and I love the Zelda-isms that are in it. I just got the quest where it's like, yo, this kid's been kidnapped, and I heard a monster took it, and you go to the graveyard, and you have to, like, get it to be nighttime, and I think I would continue to play it if there was nothing else going on, and holidays sort of present this, like, more time, longer stretches of time. Like, there are definitely times where I'm going to be busy, but there are times when, I could sit here and play games for a couple hours.
That game going to be Skyward Sword?
I just don't know. I mean, I was enjoying my time with it, but honestly, that first dungeon's like, hold the Wiimote and balance it while you go on this tightrope. Make sure you, and I like the sword swinging stuff. Like, I've never been apologetic about motion controls. I'd kind of dig, you know, the angling of the sword properly to hit the enemies properly to because they block and stuff. I think that was really cool and dynamic, and kind of the best use of the Wiimote across the board. But it's just the, you know, the aiming that, like, makes your wrist, like, kind of just fall apart. The beetle, the first item you get in a dungeon is this beetle that you can control by,
that's the thing that you make, like, fly through the air, right? By twisting and turning the, oh, man, I'd forgotten about that.
You're, like, doing this, and it's like, okay, no, wait, if I just go a little bit more left, but my wrist is saying, nah, if you go a little more left, your arm's gonna be on the floor. and that beetle ain't gonna catch anything. But that's certainly something that kind of jumps out at me as I'm playing. And from what I remember, Skyward Sword was this one item per dungeon type thing. So maybe the beetle doesn't come back in. But then you remember every time you go into the sky, you have to fly the bird, which is the same controls. Mm-hmm. It's just the, like, who
thought?
They really
doubled down on it. Yeah,
exactly. They doubled down on it. But the sword combat is a lot of fun, you know, shaking the nunchuck to bring up your shield and timing it correctly, and the downward sort of jump and finishing move attack, like, all things done well with a controller, but on the Wii kind of adds a little bit of, like, extra finesse to it. But you get really sick of playing the motion controls when every other encounter is like this, or and for the folks at home, I guess this is, you know, this is a video show, but for the audio folks, I'm like holding up, like, I've got a weird awkward platter and I'm trying to balance it, and but also not really, it's going everywhere, and that really ruins the experience for me. And but I love Zelda games, and the story in Skyward Sword is kind of like one of the best, because it sets up the entire series. And I say one of the best because there are other ones that are better, but this one's kind of, it showcases some of the experiments that Nintendo was doing. Like, they added a stamina meter, which is heavily featured in Breath of the Wild. I think the art style really, like, kind of you know, kind of works for Breath of the Wild as well. Like, it kind of feels similar, like a more cartoony, more bright look, not as blurry. But also the animations and the cutscenes and stuff, they were more characterized. Like, the characters had more dialogue, more animation to it. So this was Nintendo trying to make a Zelda game for the current consoles, but unfortunately the console they released it on wasn't a current console. Yeah. And we don't even get one on their current console. We have to wait for the Switch. And if not longer, like, I liked the game, but it clearly had issues, and I understand why Nintendo kind of left it and didn't bother going back to it. I would love to see a remastering, but honestly,
I kind of wish we could see a remastering with also, like, a set of remapped controls so that you could use the Pro Controller, because I feel like, because I never got all the way through, I did maybe three dungeons. I remember getting to like a desert area.
Sure. So that would have been right after, because I remember we discussed it, like we were talking about sort of the early years of the first year of this show, especially with Skyward Sword. We had John on to kind of discuss Zelda, and mm-hmm. the puzzle that we all kind of agreed was really cool was after you unlock the first three dungeons, like, you know, the Zelda intro dungeons, which are the first three, you get to do that puzzle where they don't really explain a lot, and you just kind of have to figure it
out.
That
was my favorite part.
Yeah, so we all got to that point, and I mean, obviously I finished it, but it's just that moment was kind of like, this is Zelda, you know? But there's a lot of moments where it's also, oh, this is Zelda. Because, like, none of this should be a surprise to anyone, you know? Nintendo's been making these games for a very long time, and, like, the long dialogue, the characters, this is not new, but yeah. We're at a point where it's like, okay, Nintendo, let's move on. And I think Breath of the Wild kind of is still going to have those moments, like the weird character animations and the text and stuff, but more of what we're looking for in a more open world, you know, like a more vast world. And Skyward Sword was much smaller than Zelda games that we're used to. That overworld is basically one island that you go to, and then there's these subsections. It's not really the Zelda we're used to.
That's the other thing, too, Zelda games are usually, like, one world, and they're very guided, they're very lock and key, like, you know, you have to go do the forest, and then you have to go do the fire, and then you have to go do the water, and you need the thing from the fire to even get to the water, so you can't do the water first, and, you know, it's a very guided experience, I think. I can't remember the name now, but the 3DS title with the above and below.
That's the new one. Link Between Worlds.
Yes, Between Worlds. That one was like you had to do the ones in the overworld first and then the under, but you could do them in any order, which, you know, was kind of going back to the open worldness. And I think that was a result of Skyward Sword and the reception that it got from everyone except for IGN, apparently. But basically just with the idea that it was so closed and, you know, you were going up to this one island and then you were going down to these very small pockets of content and there was like no linkage between them and it felt very disjointed and small. Mm-hmm. And then so I feel like Link Between Worlds then kind of flipped that on its head and gave you a bigger world to explore, gave you more to do, and let you choose the order. And, you know, like they did that by renting and buying items that, you know, like you kind of always had access to, which was really cool. And then they're going even further now with Breath of the Wild. So I hope we see that actually with the launch of the Switch, but that still remains to be seen/confirmed. But yeah, I would like to see a remastered version of Skyward Sword that I could play with the Pro Controller that kind of threw the motion control out the window. Mm-hmm. I think you could probably get away with like the sticks in order to do views and everything.
There's a great game in there. It's just unfortunate that it's kind of like it's bungled up by a very poor introduction that could easily be trimmed. There's a lot of fat that can be thrown out there. And I don't mind the overworld. I don't mind the size. I thought the flying was okay, but it's just that the motion control is a lot. There's a lot to deal with there. And I agree. You know, I played Twilight Princess on the Wii when it came out, and I kind of dug the motion control because it was all just swordplay. You know, everything else was pushing buttons. There was a bit of like aiming with the bow and arrow, but that was also optional. You could use the control stick. So when you say they doubled down, it's
thing,
like,
right? Skyward Sword, that you didn't have the option not to use the motion control. And I think at the time I was playing with, I don't even think I had the little like motion plus add-on. So I was playing with like base Wii controller and it was not sensitive enough to do a lot of the things. Like you were mentioning, turning the sword a certain way to hit different enemies. That was literally hit and miss. Just because I didn't have the motion plus on the motion control. So it was a rough game back in the day, but I'm glad that you at least got a little bit of time with it. So I played probably the thing that I spent the most time on was probably not surprisingly Mass Effect 3. Cool. And so this time I had all of the DLC downloaded from the start of my playthrough. And I also did the thing which I think you talked about probably about a year after Mass Effect 3 released. Mm-hmm. But it was the partnership with, I believe it was Telltale. It was the, like, guided comic experience, basically, that let you make all your choices from 1 and 2. Okay. So I played through that, quote-unquote played through that, at the start of my playthrough to kind of give the background to my character, which was really cool. The one thing I will say about that experience is that it is very pared down. So, for instance, in my actual Mass Effect 2 playthrough, which I couldn't import because it was on the 360 and I was playing this on backwards compatible Xbox One, in my actual playthrough of Mass Effect 2, I romanced Thane. Mm-hmm. Well, in the like guided comic book experience, it basically gives you the option to either romance no one or romance Garrus. And I was like,
Garrus is the bro. You don't romance Garrus.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, and literally the choices were either like prepare for the jump through the Omega 4 relay or get something going with Garrus. And I was like,
I mean, Garrus is I, but really, like, I mean, even if I were to play through as Lady Shepherd, and that seems to be usually my like go-to for the second playthrough, but I never quite get far enough because I always feel like I want to do the second playthrough right away, and then I realize, oh yeah, this is pretty fresh. but Lady Shep and Garrus would be Fem Shep. They would be just good buddies. Yeah. And that scene in Mass Effect 3 where you're good friends with Garrus is way better than any sex scene that that BioWare has ever put together. Actually, I would say any and all, like, they're all really awkward. It looks like two mannequins falling on top of each other. No offense, BioWare. But
yeah, so that was actually one of the things that I didn't get to experience on my first time through because I was so like, go, 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 save the galaxy. But of course, yeah. But yeah, so I played through or I watched this, you know, Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2 kind of recap. That's from cool. From the perspective of the actual game company, which was really helpful because, you know, with Mass Effect being like an open-ish universe and you able to go all over the place and sometimes you get like characters or little pieces of story kind of out of order and stuff doesn't 100% make sense. Being presented like it took probably about a half an hour to get all the way through, but being presented with that information like in chronological order according to canon, like with some little like tweaks that you can make here and there of just like, okay, you had the decision, like who did you save, Ashley or Caden? And which is actually really, really funny for your life, right?
You know what? It's one of those things that I think I knew what I was doing. Obviously, when when we named Caden, like I mean, I didn't like start dating Ashley because she's in a video game, guys. although you know, it was a bonus. But I definitely have formed my own. I did a cheat code and I got both Caden and Ashley on my team, so I feel pretty special.
But yeah, like, so you make that decision, like, do you save Caden or do you save Ashley? And so you still have to make those decisions. And then the comic kind of, you know, goes from there. Mm-hmm. And so that was really cool. And then, your Mass Effect 3 playthrough starts with the decisions that you made while having the recap of the comic. So that was really, really fun. And, so I got into Mass Effect 3 and first of all, I forgot, and I don't know how I forgot because we've touted this game as, you know, one of our favorites for literally the last 5 years. But Mass Effect 3, I forgot what a great game it was. And I also forgot how much freaking talking and cutscenes and dialogue there is in that game. Like, I think I played for probably like 3 hours total. And I spent like the first half hour like watching the comic and making all my choices. And then like even as cool as the first part of the story is where there's the Reaper invasion of Earth, there's a lot of that that's just dialogue and like cutscenes and stuff. And I didn't actually start shooting things really until you get to Mars, which is the first planet. Yep. And then even then, like, you know, you're reunited with Liara.
Yeah, I think
I think that's who she is. Or I feel like I'm getting that name wrong.
Blue alien? Like,
yeah, blue alien chick, yeah.
That's Liara then, yeah.
Yeah. Like you're reunited with her, and then there's like cutscene conversations with her, and then it's like every room that you clear, it tells you more story with a cutscene, which is super freaking cool. But I totally forgot how much, and I was just trying to play through like as quickly as I possibly could, but there's so much content there. And then so I was like, okay, I know that I have to try to play through as much as I can for Gamers Inn to talk about how, sure, you know, the whether the game stands up or not and whether I'm going to play more of it. And if we were right in our, you know, assessment of the game back in like episode probably like 40.
Well, is that, see, maybe funny, earlier? It's 13 when, or 12 or 13 when we started talking about Mass Effect, and we did a Mass Effect special for like 11 or 10. And honestly, I did not realize that Mass Effect 3 came out 5 years ago. That's crazy.
It doesn't feel like it. The one thing that I noticed both in the Skyrim remaster and in Mass Effect 3 is the like facial animations. Like, you really realize how far facial animation technology has come in the last 5 years, because the like lip animation I think is really well done, like when not so much on the main character, which is kind of funny. I think it's because there's so many character customization options, which also took a very, very long time both in Mass Effect and Skyrim, even though again I was trying to fly through it to get to the combat and get to the story. But I think it has to do with the fact that there's so many different options for your, and like little tweaks for your face in Mass Effect, so sometimes the animations are kind of funny. But on all your supporting characters, I think they're animated really well, and when they're talking, at least their lips match pretty well to what's actually being said. But in terms of like other things, like just the way that like eyes move or don't move, and little muscles in your face and things, like there's none of that in these 5-year-old games. And it was really noticeable, like looking back on it now. I remember thinking originally, like, oh my God, the graphics are amazing. Like, look at this world. It's so fantastic. It's so detailed. And now looking back on it, I'm kind of like, oh, okay.
they're kind of like, there's a lot of memes out there with Shepard and the way he would animate his face, and those memes are so correct in that those facial animations in the original Mass Effect series was kind of like the talking head, right? Just kind of like stationary, and then you'd see the lips move. And that was one thing that worried me about the Andromeda trailer, is the animations on the face looked a bit off. But still, compared to previous games, like, it's still stellar in comparison. And I,
since Mass Effect 3, we've had things like, the first one that comes to my mind is L.A. Noire, where they had all the motion capture and all the different points on people's actual faces. And I feel like everything is, and even L.A. Noire was probably like 4 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like we've just come leaps and bounds since then with facial animation and, you know, very, very close to Uncanny Valley type stuff. But at least, you know, they've come a long way. And watching Mass Effect 3 and watching all the cutscenes are pretty okay, but it's like most of the other stuff that's just kind of weird. And anytime that your character is involved, it's kind of weird. But overall, like, it was actually pretty well done. And I enjoyed all of this, the story, to the point that I just slowed right down and I was like, okay, I'm not going to get through an entire playthrough of Mass Effect before we have to record the show.
No.
So I should just stop trying to rush through, and I should just take a look around and kind of try to remember a lot of the stuff. I'm totally not exhausted. I'm not yawning right now.
How late were you playing Mass Effect is what your yawn is trying to dictate here. So that,
but yeah, like, basically I just kind of slowed down and took my time and took a look around. And then I remembered, like, even more than just like the cutscenes and all the dialogue and stuff in Mass Effect 3 and in the previous Mass Effects as well, like the data pads that you find, like anytime that you come up to something new, it goes in like your encyclopedia journal thing. And like the amount of extra content and extra background that is there is just insane. And so like I started reading all the data pad stuff and I was like, oh yeah. And especially since this is my like third or fourth playthrough of Mass Effect, I'm like, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is this thing. And now I remember like the differences between all these different races and what's actually going on. And, you know, like when it's not just all weird names for different aliens, like once you have a little bit more context and you understand what's going on, it's like the difference between just watching Game of Thrones, a TV show, or having read the books ahead of time and having some idea of who the characters are and then watching the TV show, it helps you so much more to actually make sense of what's going on in the universe. So I felt like I had that sense going into Mass Effect 3, and I was like, oh, right, especially with the comic playthrough at the beginning. They are very, like, succinct and to the point with, like, what the explanation of what everything is. So having that going in and then, like, reading all these other things, I was like, oh, that's all right. I'm remembering this now, and, oh, that makes so much more sense, and, oh, I get that now. So Mass Effect 3, I think, and I didn't get a chance to get into the multiplayer or anything else, but just the way it plays, the story it tells, like, it absolutely still stands up to the point that I can't believe that it was 5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, this title, having not, it feels like we've been hearing a lot about the next Mass Effect for at least a couple years. So it feels like Mass Effect 3 wasn't that long ago, just because it's, it usually when they talk about a new Mass Effect, it was like right after the last one and they'd release it 2 to 3 years later. And I feel like Mass Effect 3 was kind of, and the Mass Effect series as a whole was kind of this epic saga that BioWare told that just worked so well from beginning to almost end. And I mean, we can't talk about Mass Effect 3 without talking about the ending. I know you didn't play it, but like 5 years later, does that not seem silly, that whole controversy about the ending? Like, when you really think about it, it's kind of
dumb. Yeah, it kind of does, because I mean, it was, I had such a great time playing through it, and I think, like, they told the story that they wanted to tell, and I never really had that big a problem with the ending. I know even when that whole big, huge controversy was going on, I still didn't really agree with it, but it's so funny. Just and I do agree with the point that you made, I think, last episode, basically saying Andromeda is going to take place in the future.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to get some sort of a canon ending. Yeah. And so eventually. It's like it's eventually somehow something had to have happened. Right. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they go with as canon and how they present that to players and what the response is. But yeah, the whole controversy over the ending seems a little bit silly now.
It's I mean, and like I also want to mention to folks who might still be a little raw about that ending. I mean, it's been 5 years. Stop itching. Get a cream. I don't know. But I don't know. I don't know. Like, if it's a little raw, what are you doing? Anyways, I feel like that what they did with the DLC, the free DLC to kind of address that issue, kind of went a long way to add and patch some plot holes and stuff. And I really appreciate it. One of those being like, you know, team members just disappear and then show up elsewhere, and that was a big leap for us, I think, remembering back to our spoiler cast. And we were both pretty a little miffed about the ending, and not to the point where we were like writing petitions or you know, looking for people's heads, but I feel like the paid DLC for that game suffered because of the free DLC that they gave out. And I personally would love to go back and play Mass Effect 3, and the way you described the comic book sort of intro, that might be the best way to play this series in time for Andromeda, because we're now looking at what, 3 months? They haven't announced a date, but let's say it comes out in March, because BioWare loves March. That's three months.
Yeah, didn't they say spring?
They've said spring, but BioWare has a thing for March. Like, they, I don't know whether it's because my birthday's in March or just they like March. They like to take their vacation in March because they're making the game in Edmonton and winter sucks in Edmonton.
Makes sense.
I don't know. But either way, I'm thinking I might have to boot this back up, because when you mentioned you were going to play it, I'm like, oh man, if I had time, maybe, because they've got it working on backwards compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
How does it play on backwards compatibility? Is it pretty solid?
Oh my god, dude, load times are so fast.
Oh, like, I'm sold. I'm in. Yeah. I will play. I might even make it like one of my holiday games, just to kind of check it out. And the comic book is available to anyone. It's not like a paid or a DLC type thing.
It is a paid DLC, but I think it's $4 Canadian, so I just paid it, because I was like, I want to see what this experience is like. It's something we haven't talked about on Gamers In previously. Even though we've talked about so much Mass Effect stuff, we didn't really go into to big detail. We talked about the fact that it was going to be a thing, but we didn't actually experience it. So I thought it would be a good thing to talk about today. And yeah, it was a really cool experience. And I really liked kind of the guided story that isn't as much as playing, you know, the first two games, but still gives you the gist, fills in the holes in the canon and puts you through the story and the timeline that they intended, and then lets you pick the big things, like your kind of renegade and paragon choices and stuff like that. So I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, and I guess the real question is, can I be Garrus's good friend through the comic without him trying to sleep with me? That's what I want to know.
Well, yes, you can make the decision to basically, so yeah, you couldn't romance anyone. The only romance option in 2, at least in the comic book, was Garrus. And so the other option there is to basically like focus on the mission, like prepare on your own. And okay. So that's what I did because I didn't have Thane available to me. And prepare. Everyone knows the story of my romance with Thane.
It's true. He was dying. So it's like, all right.
So he was an excellent choice because I knew he wasn't going to be around to slow me down.
Oh no. Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah. There's a joke there, but I'm not there's several ways.
Ryan does not agree with the way that I chose my Mass Effect romance.
I liked my my romance choices, so I went Liara in the first game because it's like aliens. Let's do it, right? And then like the second game, she disappears. She's not a party member and she right. kinda like I don't know, you don't have the option to continue that romance, but you have the option to either...
Hayden's the same, right? He's not there in 2 either, because that's when you're, like, with Cerberus, so...
I can't remember, but yeah, there are some characters that you would have romanced in the first one that kind of disappear, and yeah, I think Caden and Ashley were those two characters as well. They kind of disappear in 2 and then come back in 3. And
depending on who you save in 1, because I think regardless of how you play, you have to make a choice between Caden and Ashley.
I now, in my defense, I played Mass Effect before I met Ashley, but I did I didn't kill off Ashley, but she was a racist, so I don't know.
Maybe Ashley, I remember Ashley not being a very great character. I found her quite annoying.
Yeah,
Caden's a cutie, so Caden wins.
I kind of just left him on the planet because he kind of like he was the most sort of honorable. I feel like Ashley would have kind of complained about me choosing her to stay. But I killed Rex because he kind of went after Ashley. I don't know why I did it. I was just like, I wonder what this does. Oh, he's dead. And I hadn't really played a lot of those types of games where choice matters and characters die or don't return. And but in that case, they brought back a completely identical Krogan for the second game, but with a different name. So
And I think so if you save Rex in the first game, because that is what I did in my first playthroughs, was saving Rex, and so it's the choice that I made in the comic. So I think if you save Rex, then you find him as like leader of the Krogans in 3.
Right, and he's not a I don't think he can ever join your party. And that was the other thing about this game, is that it felt very the series in general, like when you made a choice to kill off a character, that character wasn't going to come back in any meaningful way anyways.
I feel like there's different dialogue options.
Yeah, of course.
When you're dealing with, because one of the things you deal with in Mass Effect 3 is curing the genophage that the Krogans are affected with that makes it so that they can't reproduce. With Rex being the leader of the Krogans, there's different dialogue choices and stuff, and you have, I guess, maybe like a lower threshold of like the amount of paragon or renegade points that you need when you're talking to him to select certain dialogue options, because you already have a history with him. So if he was like generic Krogan number 7 now leading the Krogans, then, you know, you would have to have more reputation in the galaxy, basically. But because he knows you, your reputation points, the requirements are lower. So it's kind of cool, like how stuff like that, it's a choice you made in Mass Effect 1 and it has like meaningful impacts on Mass Effect 3. So I think it's really cool. But
is this the one that has the Muradin singing, or not Muradin, Maureen, or what's his name?
It's not my Maureen. God. He's the scientist.
He's the weird
guy.
Like alien guy who has the eyes up on these little ridges.
When you say weird alien guy and you do fingers like this, it doesn't actually.
Does it
really,
not help like, you at least? Like no. You can kind of see me doing this. I don't know. He's got like a U head. He's like a Wii U before the Wii U came out. Except
yes.
The Wii U logo. What's his name? It's not Muradin, because that's the dwarf in Warcraft.
Yeah, but
Morden. 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 Yeah. Thank you, Leo. Anyways, yeah, he was cool, and he sang in the second one.
I think he sang in the second one, but yeah, I know what you're talking.
He went a long way for the game we're not even talking about. Yeah. I really feel like this is one of those games that holds up the best of the lot that we've been talking about so far, and backwards compatibility, it's a thing, and it works quite well. So honestly, if you have those discs, folks, just go grab them, chuck them in your Xbox One, and you're on your way. It was that simple.
Yeah, it was a bit of a pain in the ass though when I was trying to do it because when I first put the disc in, it like didn't work, and then the interface on the Xbox One is so terrible, I couldn't figure out how to say like just read the freaking disc. So like after looking it up online and everything else, and I was like, I did that, and you know, trying to click through all of the different settings and everything else, I couldn't find it. So then I popped the disc out and put it back in again, and then it worked. So
I think, yeah, because that's a download a patch, and if I'm not mistaken, the only backwards compatibility game I've played was a digital game, so it downloaded all the patches.
Digital games are super freaking easy.
Okay,
but disc games, they do have to download a patch, and I think it was like 15 gigs for Mass Effect 3, and then if you want the DLC, you have to download all the DLC and install them all separately. But
so it's not installing off the disc; it's literally installing off the server. You just need the disc to authenticate. Is that what that is happening?
Basically, I think so. Yes.
See. On the Wii U, you just throw the disc in. Now, it's got its own rigmarole where it has to boot into an entirely different mode, and then you have to relaunch the game. It's a little fidgety, but it's not... downloading a 15-gigabyte patch, like you're just using the disc as authentication, just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That sucks, but I mean... Whatever, I guess it's...
I haven't... And granted, I'm not that far in, but I haven't gotten to a point yet where I've had to, like, replace a disc. So, because on Xbox 360, the Mass Effect 3 came on multiple discs, right?
Yeah. So how does that work? You didn't have to put the second disc in on install?
I haven't had to yet, no. Not on install and not on gameplay. Well,
you know what it probably did is maybe you have to put the second disc in whenever the game needs to kind of authenticate that second disc content, but you have the content on the drive that's the 15 gigabytes.
So. I wonder if it would even make you do that. Like, I mean, I obviously have the game, I have the disc, so I'm wondering if, like, it installed the second disc's contents onto the hard drive so that I didn't have to do the disc switching stuff.
Mm. Okay.
Which could also be a thing. I'm not sure. But anyways, so yeah, Mass Effect 3, I think, totally holds up. I'm going to continue my playthrough. I'm going to play through. I can actually have short and purple hair, so that made me happy. Because that was, I remember, one of the complaints that I had like 5 years ago was that all the haircuts were short, and I didn't feel like I was adequately represented.
Well, there you go. Well, in space, so now,
I am actually Commander Shepard.
There you go. Commander Shepard. Is this your favorite podcast on the Citadel, or?
Absolutely. Perfect. Oh, man. So, yeah, Mass Effect 3, I'm going to continue my playthrough. I'm going to finish it up before Andromeda launches, and that will be in spring 2017. And I'm really looking forward to it. So something that I did on Monday was go and watch the new Star Wars. So, segue, Ryan, how does SWTOR hold up?
Rogue One is amazing, guys. Go watch that, and then forget that there is only that there's more than one great Star Wars game out right now, which is Battlefront. I played Star Wars: Old Republic, which was an MMO we talked about in probably our third episode, and then neglected to mention it ever after until today. In which that game is still very much, I wouldn't call it alive. But it's on, like, life support. Like, BioWare is still, like, putting content out for it, which is nice to see that a company still cares about it. But I think we did mention on the show once, not too long ago, I think you might have gone back to it when it went free-to-play.
I did, yeah. Okay. So that would have been, even then, was, like, 3 years ago now, I think, give or take. and it went free to play, and it was an awful experience because basically it was like quote unquote free to play, but if you actually wanted to experience anything in the game, or if you actually wanted to play with friends, then you basically had to still pay the subscription. So free to play was like you only had, I think, humans available to you as a playable race, and then like maybe one other, but none of the cool ones.
No cool aliens.
Yeah, you couldn't be any cool aliens. You were basically just a human. I think some of the classes were actually locked down. So you could be like one of two choices for class. And then your movement speed and XP gain were, well, I guess normal if you were free to play, but then like boosted by like 50% if you were paying for the subscription. Wow. So even if you were trying to play with a friend, like, you could be running side by side, and then, like, you would be here, and your friend would just be, like, running further and further and further away. And so that was really, really frustrating. I think I only ever got to level, like, 6, maybe, like, the first, basically leaving the first planet, I think, right, or the first area is as far as I ever got in SWTOR. And it just, yeah. It was not a good experience, and I could see how it could have been cool because I did like some of the combat and things that I did. So I could see how it could be interesting. But the fact that I couldn't do any cool things and I couldn't keep up with my friends was just such a buzzkill that I never went back to it.
Yeah, so I'll skip to the end. The biggest issue with Star Wars The Old Republic is that World of Warcraft is a game that has consistently continued to get better. The way that Star Wars' free-to-play is built is kind of keeps the main core of the game intact for the last 5 years. So the core of the game that I played over the weekend has not changed over the last 5 years, which is the, you know, the MMO standardized like bar where you hit your numbers and you do some moves. But it just felt the exact same I remember it from 5 years ago, which, if you can remember WoW 5 years ago, that would be an issue if it continued to be the same mechanics. They've tried to, like, keep it going. And I know I've been tough on WoW. Like, I kind of fall out of it, and I kind of say, yeah, it's an MMO. You push the buttons, yada, yada. This is an MMO. You push the buttons, and yada, yada. Like, this is worse than... At least WoW tries to kind of, like, keep it fresh and keep it going and mix things up. This game has that issue where it's not... The MMO core of it is holding back what could be a really cool Old Republic game. Because what they've done with these new expansions, they've dropped sort of the norm of, hey, you get a couple five more levels and here's a new planet to explore. They've added what they call chapters. And this goes back to what you said, it's like a mess of free to play. It's really hard to understand just what the heck's going on in this game. You boot it up and it's like, notification, tutorial, here's the store, you have this many cartel coins, here's how you subscribe, you know, here's why your character sucks. It's like, oh my gosh, like, just let me play. Because I started a new character, ran through it, and I was like, instantly, like, no, this is not what I want to do. I was going to subscribe to check out the new content that they've added, but luckily I found a free trial link. If you subscribe to their newsletter, they'll give you the first chapter of the newest expansion that actually just came out like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really neat.
I legitimately did not realize that there was still consistent content coming out for that game.
I don't know if I'd call it consistent, but I'd certainly call it like chunks of content. And it's a big chunk, and it's story-focused. So they've come out with these expansions that are chapters, and they are heavily story-focused where... you actually choose the chapter you want to play, you hit play chapter, and it loads you into a new sort of instance to play this story moment. And the story moment I played was the first chapter of this newest expansion. So I don't know anything about what's going on. Like, there are characters talking to me like I should know who they are. And that's not necessarily the game's fault, because I did boost a character. It gave you a free boost to 65 to experience this new content. And, you know, I kind of appreciate it, but it might be too little too late, definitely too little too late for me to keep playing, because I dropped this like a hot potato. it's just really not that good. Like, they need to, like, kind of...
I believe your text that you sent me said that it was rough.
that was apologetic. Like, I played the content, and at first I was kind of like, you know, this is a 5-year-old game, so it looks a little, it looks 5 years old, but, and it's an MMO, so it technically looks maybe like 7 or 8 years old. And you're playing through it, and the, you know, the, you're presented with characters talking to each other, and there's back and forth. There's dialogue options. I really love that about this game. It's all voiced. And I was kind of like, ah, okay, I remember why I kind of dug this game. And then you get into the combat, and it's just a mess. Just a giant hot mess of lightsabers and just sound effects from the Lucas Farm. And it's just, oh my gosh, it's just not what you would want in a Star Wars game, or even an MMO for that matter, because it feels very aged in that ilk.
Yeah, so I guess I would have played it a few years ago, and I'm trying to remember. I feel like I went evil, like a Inquisitor, maybe. Does that sound like something I could have done?
Yeah, the Inquisitor was an evil character, the Sith. I had one Sith character because friends of mine were playing Sith, but then my alts were always like the Alliance characters and mm-hmm. some smugglers and whatnot. But Inquisitor was kind of the, I think, the beefier dudes, like the tanks.
Mm.
I can't remember, honestly.
Maybe that's not the right one, because I'm the one that I was playing reminds me a lot actually of like a Vanguard in Mass Effect, where like very much like rush in, do like some big like knockbacky type electrocute them ability, and then like have my blaster thing. So mm-hmm. whatever that one was, that's what I am vaguely remembering from a very short playthrough years ago. But
yeah,
I remember that was a kind of new combat style, because for the longest time I had done ranged combat in whatever games I was in. I was always a mage or an archer or some sort of like way far back something. So Vanguard and Mass Effect, going back to Mass Effect again, was my first experience with that kind of a Russian close combat playstyle. And so I feel like, yeah, that was the kind of thing that I gravitated towards when I tried Star Wars. But, SWTOR.
SWTOR.
But yeah, so, I mean, I enjoyed that, but that might have been just because it was a new combat style to me. So that's why I enjoyed it, not necessarily because SWTOR had good combat.
I don't know. This game, it feels like they need to kind of cut their losses. And I don't want to wish people out of jobs, but if people want a proper Old Republic game, then this game needs to cease to exist. You're not going to get a proper Old Republic game. And those games are fantastic. I was actually interchanging with people on Twitter about what games we should play, and someone started talking about Star Wars. I'm like, yeah, I might check out Old Republic. And like, yeah, you should check it out. I'm like, okay, what class should I play? Should I subscribe? And they're like, no, you should definitely not play the MMO. You should play the first game. It's like, well, that game came out probably like 15 years before we started the show. So not gonna happen this week. But if we want a KOTOR 3, which honestly we might get, because EA has the license, the exclusive license to Star Wars, and they are going to be pumping them out like crazy. They actually have two studios working on a new Star Wars game, not including Battlefield. So we're not going to get KOTOR 3, but we could get something that kind of brings us closer to that adventure RPG Star Wars game. Unfortunately, the Old Republic, I give them kudos for trying something new and focusing on the strong suit of the game, which is sort of the story back and forth dialogue mm-hmm. choice. But the combat is just, it's just so, it's a mess. It's just a lot of things happening at once. You don't feel cool for doing stuff with a lightsaber. And that's kind of the first rule about Star Wars game. You have to feel cool with it's a damn sword made of light that cuts people in half. And if you don't feel cool with that, that's a major issue. Yeah, major issue. So, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, so you've now talked about two games.
Mm-hmm.
That you kind of tried and went back to you, and they didn't really stand the test of time. But we both played through, and this is the one I was talking about that was a little bit kind of cheaty, because we played through the remastered edition, so not the actual official was what started the show edition, but we played through some of Skyrim, the special edition, which is the remastered one that came out a little over a month ago now, I guess. And I don't know about you, dude, but oh my god, the nostalgia is real, and that game is freaking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of remastering, it hits that level where it's like, I think this is how I remember this game looking.
You know? I didn't remember it being like, well, I remember when Skyrim came out, we were talking about like how beautiful it looked and how amazing like the mountains were and the sky and everything else. And I remembered like when I went in and played it, I was just like, I don't know what they changed. I don't know what they remastered because this is what I remember it looking like. And I think that that's like the perfect level. They basically took 5-year-old graphics and then brought them up to now without me noticing a big change. So I think they did a fantastic job of bringing it.
Is everyone okay?
I guess so. I think so.
Someone spilled a drink. Party foul. Party foul. Episode 250.
I think it was upstairs anyways.
Oh, okay. Well.
But yeah, so right, Skyrim. Skyrim, yeah, Skyrim. Remaster. Good job, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I noticed the same thing with Skyrim that I did with Mass Effect 3, which was like the lips move, but not a whole lot else moves on the faces.
Yeah, there's a couple other things. Like you notice the 5-year-old engine when you're talking to folks, and it kind of like locks you into a conversation, which they stopped doing after Skyrim. And the thing that got me is like where you notice is a remastering is like kind of the character models. So anything to do with faces, anything to do with enemies, you can kind of, okay, that's pretty boxy. But the environments, they've done stuff to everything. The water looks fantastic. The landscapes. I was actually walking at the very start of the game when you have to walk to, I think it's Winterfell, and you get to this hill and you see the vista. Like, I do not remember that skybox quite looking like that. I don't remember seeing Winterfell in the distance and seeing all
Winterfell?
Of it. Is it Winterfell? What is it?
Think it's Winterfell's from Game of Thrones.
Okay, well, excuse me for mixing it. Okay, what is it? Winter Run? Is it Winter Run?
Yes, I think so.
Well, I mean, whose fault is that really? it's my own. But Winter Run, yeah, you see on the horizon, you see Winter Run and you see the castles and all the buildings. I just don't remember seeing that or remember it very well from the first, you know, outing of this game. And, you know, and I know a lot of people are saying like, you could play with mods and it would look like this like a year ago. And it's like, all right, whatever, fine. If you want to ruin rain on our parade.
That's the big difference for me too, right? Is that I played through on Xbox. I didn't play through on PC. Mm. I owned it on PC, but just never kind of went back to it because I'd already sunk 150 hours into Skyrim on the Xbox. So I really think that because I was, as I'm kind of playing through, like, you did the opening sequence where you escape from the dragon attack and the Imperials are trying to cut your head off, and then, you know, going and discovering the towns and thinking of all the different places that you could go, because it was like not necessarily the first open world experience at all, but it was such a big world compared to even previous Elder Scrolls offerings. And it was very much like a, you can go and stumble into whatever cave you want to, but every once in a while you're going to find something 40 levels higher than you and you're going to just die. Mm-hmm. And that experience was just so much fun, and it pulled me right back into the point where now I want to like sit and play extensively through Skyrim again. Like, I am ready for that 100+ hour experience in Skyrim.
It's funny when I think about playing Skyrim Special Edition, and I was enjoying myself. I maybe played about an hour last night, and I created a new character. I started.
Did that take you forever? Because it took me a really long time.
You know, it feels like there's a lot of options there, but there really
isn't. It's nothing compared to like ESO Online, but still, I found both Mass Effect 3 and with Skyrim, I was just like, oh my god, there's like literally like 20 sliders under nose.
Yeah, no. That being said, like, there's a lot of options there, but I'm terrible at making characters look good, so I just picked a preset I liked and kind of tweaked it a bit. But I found myself playing as a Nord again, even because I
went high elf again.
Yeah, I just find the Nords just look normal. And I know we were talking about SWTOR having humans as the only option. I'm going to sound really boring here. I kind of like just playing as the most normal character, which is, when you think about it, like, it's a little lame, and I will own up to that. And even in Mass Effect, it's like, nope, standard Shep, let's do this.
But, oh, you heard it here first. Ryan is default Shep.
Yeah, default Shep. I even like flip the switch and play as default Fem Shep. But it's I think the only I think I customized my character a little bit in Fallout, which is, was going to be my point, that when I'm playing Skyrim, I find like, you know, I could really just play the next gen version of this, which is Fallout, but it's still, it's different. The you don't really realize it until you play both side by side. The combat is very different. And I kind of dig like the melee combat in Skyrim, because in Fallout it feels very punishing to go melee. Like, you're constantly getting badgered by enemies and losing a lot of health. In Skyrim, I feel like a badass, like fire in one hand and an axe in another. Let's do this. And they added all the finishing animations. And like, yes. I'll be like toasting a rabbit on one end, and I'll be like just taking a wolf and grabbing it and just, whoosh, you know, like it, they put a lot into that after that initial offering. Like, they patched it quite a bit for that year.
I didn't realize, like, I didn't, I guess, remember that finishing animations were a thing, because as I was escaping from the dragon and going through, like, the underground, there's a couple times where you come across Imperials, and, like, there was a time where I did a finishing move that was basically this big, like, stab in the gut, and I was like, when it, like, cut away to the animation, I was like, oh, right, like, yeah. I did, finishing moves.
It's that was added in a patch sort of after, and I think the patch or the game originally had finishing moves for melee only, and then they added it for magic and archery as well, I believe. I could remember that incorrectly, but because I played primarily as an archery character in my first playthrough, and I didn't quite get those finishing moves until I kind of went back and played a lot of I played a lot of Skyrim. Like, I finished all the main story content in the main game, and did a bunch of side quests, and a bunch of side campaigns, and then I did all the DLC except for the house building. I was never very good at that, but I bought it anyways because Skyrim. But no, I mean, in terms of a Skyrim special edition, like, and free if you own all the DLC on PC, at least the deal was. With the Steam sale, you'll probably get it for super cheap in like a day. But yeah, no, I really dug it, and I kind of created a melee fire character just to go around and have fun with. So I mean, not to like say I'm gonna go play two giant 100-hour RPGs this Christmas, but I feel like I'm at least gonna continue to chip away at Skyrim like here and there as I go through. We're not gonna get another Elder Scrolls for a very long time.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's because they're pouring a lot into ESO, and I never got into ESO the way that I did into Skyrim. And it's kind of too bad, because I feel like there's a really cool story to be told there, and I didn't really, you know, get it, because I only played about 15 hours, I guess, of ESO. Like, I really didn't play it all that much, just because I'm so invested in Warcraft. That it was just hard to get into another MMO. There were a lot of systems there, and they were really, really cool, and I really enjoyed playing ESO, but I couldn't justify the time sink that was that, which is funny, because now I'm talking about, you know, sinking time into Skyrim, but the difference is where it's a single player experience. If I play it for 10 hours and then put it aside for 3 weeks and then play it for another 10 hours, I'm not falling behind anyone, you know, like, I'm still experiencing the content, and it's like, it's all there for me to experience at my own pace. Whereas like, if you're playing an MMO, it's like, there's a like curve of content, and you know, you should be in a certain place at a certain time. And if you're not, then you absolutely miss out on stuff. So I felt with ESO that I just couldn't keep up, because I was trying to keep up with that and WoW, and then all the other things that we had to do as well. And then on top of that, when ESO came out, I had already started up Angry Chicken. So I had, you know, Hearthstone I had to stay on top of, Warcraft I was staying on top of, because that was my MMO of choice, and plus all the stuff we had to play for Gamers In, and it was just too much. So I really wish that they had made that a single-player game instead. Or that, you know, there was an Elder Scrolls 6 on the docket, but...
Yeah, it's the way they've sort of addressed Elder Scrolls 6 in relation to Special Edition coming out was basically like, we wanted to put this out because Elder Scrolls 6 isn't even on the docket. Like, it's kind of just, it's something we're going to do eventually, but it's not our next game. And when a company like Bethesda says that, it's like, no, it could be a decade before we get it. And to think we might not get a Elder Scrolls on this generation of hardware, kind of sad, you know, because Skyrim and Oblivion were both on 360 and we haven't had a proper Elder Scrolls on the next gen yet. And I mean, that's kind of a bummer.
Well, it's ESO. That's what it is, right? So
yeah, no, you're right. And I think Elder Scrolls Online suffers from the same issue that the Old Republic MMO suffers from, is that there's this MMO underlying that kind of makes it a different game and kind of makes it so like you have to trudge through the MMO-ness of it to get to the Elder Scrolls or the Old Republic that you want. And that's kind of a bummer and makes you just kind of be like, all right, fine, I guess I'll ignore this. And you know Elder Scrolls 6 is basically going to ignore everything that happened in the MMO because it is a different developer.
Yeah, it's a different like universe-ish.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's the same universe, but at the same time, like, different.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm excited for anything that they've got going, but I think that the remastered Skyrim is enough for me now to at least get my single-player Elder Scrolls fix. But I think that pretty much does it.
That's a good chunk.
Yeah. That's our look back at things that we played in the early years and kind of what stood the test of time and what didn't. And I'm really glad that you all stood the test of time and kept listening to the Gamers Inn and allowed us to get all the way to episode 250. If you would like to support the show, you can do so in many different ways. You can go to etch.amove.tv or shirts.amove.tv to pick up some super cool Amove swag, including stuff from Gamers Inn, Angry Chicken, and Into the Nexus. Or you can head on over to patreon.com/thegamersinn. And support us that way. We are going to have some changes coming to the Patreon in the new year. I know we've been switching things up quite a lot recently, but I think that some of the changes we decided as a result of our lack of patron hangout this last month. So look for the changes. We want to make being a patron of the Gamers and feel as rewarding as possible to you guys. So we've made some decisions and make sure that you guys check it out. We will detail everything once it's finalized in the new year. But I know Ryan and I are both really looking forward to it. And I think we've made some really good decisions. So thank you everyone for supporting us so far. And make sure again, you check out patreon.com/thegamersinn. You can also join in on our Discord server and all that fun stuff. And as a reminder, as always, bit.ly/TGI2016 for our Extra Life campaign if you would like to support us there right up until December 31st. I think that's going to do it for us tonight. Ryan, have I missed anything?
No, that's a pretty heavy info, which is another information. another thing we discussed, maybe we don't like, you know, end the show with just a word dump, but no, definitely check out Extra Life. Still lots of, you know, there's a good chunk of December left that could be, and I know a lot of people are busy, but
10 whole days.
So it's a good cause, and we promise January 1st, you will hear about Extra Life for at least like 7, 8, 9 months, probably. So yeah, we won't, exactly. It'll be worth the wait, trust me.
All right, so you can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and For Azeroth, the new WoW show from Garrett and myself. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. I have cat hair in my nose. Thank you, Thrall. Don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/amovetv. You can also find the show on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what games you think stand the test of time after 5 years, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye,
we'll be doing Game of the Year next week.
Ooh, so exciting.
Fun.